Welcome to the Mayo Clinic podcast. I'm Vivian Williams, and we're speaking with Dr. Richard Eamon about MR elastography. Dr. Eamon, what is MR elastography?
Well, MR elastography is the full name for it is magnetic resonance elastography, and that is a technique that we have developed at the Mayo Clinic to image quantitatively the mechanical properties of tissue. So that's where the word elastography comes from. And magnetic resonance implies that we use MRI to do that job.
So you're using the MRI machine to get an image of the liver. Mm-hmm. And how does the elastography piece fit in? What have you done to change the regular MRI technology?
Sure. I think you could start with this with the traditional physical medicine. And for centuries, physicians have used something called palpation to detect diseases, tumors in the thyroid, breast, and prostate. Most of those, in fact, are still first detected by simple touch. So it's always been understood that it would be very valuable if we could somehow extend that particular traditional physical examination technique into the modern age of imaging. It turns out that imaging in itself, the conventional imaging technologies that are available to us, like computed tomography and magnetic resonance imaging and ultrasound imaging, none of these are able to directly assess what it is that the physician detects when they use their hand or touch to detect a disease process. So it's always been understood that if somehow we could develop a technology to do that, it would be likely be very helpful. So for a number of years, we've been working on a technique that we call magnetic resonance elastography that has really been developed to try to do that. Now, in the case you asked about liver and applying magnetic resonance elastography to liver, let me start by talking a little bit about why we might want to use something that looks at mechanical properties to look at the liver. And the liver is an interesting organ with many functions in the body, very important functions, but it's very, very silent. And there are many disease processes that can affect the liver, cause inflammation of liver tissue, but the liver has only a very limited number of ways of responding to that. And typically the way the liver responds to almost any disease process that affects it is to become inflamed and to develop what's called fibrosis, which you can think of as scarring at a microscopic level. And so this process of fibrosis, which is really one of the only ways that the liver can respond to an insult, such as caused by a disease process or some kind of toxic reaction, the only way it can respond is by this process of fibrosis, but it's a very silent condition. And many patients can have serious liver disease and ongoing damage to their liver and not even know about it with no physical finding at all. For instance, there are about over 100 million people in the world that have a condition called hepatitis C. Hepatitis C is a chronic disease in many people, and many people, perhaps three quarters, it never causes any problem throughout their lifetime. It's not really treatable directly. But some people with this condition have a process of liver inflammation that goes on, and they gradually develop this scarring in their liver. And if this scarring progresses to a condition called cirrhosis, now it's no longer treatable. And in fact, it's associated with death in about half of the people within 5 years, unless it's treated with a liver transplant. So let's go back. How do we diagnose this, what could be a silent disease involving the liver, in medicine now? Basically, the gold standard for making this diagnosis is a biopsy. It's a needle biopsy. It's a relatively safe procedure, but it is an invasive test that involves putting a needle into the liver and sampling a very tiny little bit of liver tissue and then examining it and seeing whether or not there is an abnormality in the cells. It is an invasive procedure. It's associated with some risk of bleeding and infection. It's not a pleasant thing that you or I would want to have very often. And it's also associated with something called sampling error. Because the liver is very large and we only take a very small bit of tissue, we can end up with a piece that doesn't represent what's going on elsewhere in the liver. So we've understood that it would be very good if we could have some way to diagnose this condition, these little tiny microscopic scars occurring throughout the liver, without having to do a biopsy. Ordinary imaging techniques like computed tomography, ultrasound, magnetic resonance imaging, these aren't able to detect these fibrotic scars that are occurring in people who have this condition.
Because they're so small?
Because they are so small. In fact, it starts initially at the molecular level. There's an accumulation, really not even within the cells themselves, there's an accumulation of this fibrous molecular material in the liver at the very beginning, long before you could even identify a scar, even through a microscope.
Oh my, okay.
The important thing, I guess, before I go on with this is to say that if we can identify the fact that this process is going on, there are treatments. And so, for instance, a patient with hepatitis C, there are some treatments. For instance, an agent called interferon can be used. But these treatments are not without side effects.
And they're medications.
They are medications. And they're not without side effects, and we would certainly not want to be using them. Patients would not want to be on them and have the side effects if they didn't, for certain, have the problem that this of liver fibrosis going on.
And so it's not a preventive way to avoid fibrosis? It's something you'd administer after they had it, ideally?
Correct. I think in general it would be used as a way of treating it once you knew it was present, yes.
Okay.
Because I think that many of these treatments are associated with considerable amount of symptoms, and we wouldn't want to just be using them unless we had the problem. So conventional imaging technologies aren't able to detect this, and yet we know that when a tissue becomes fibrotic, the one thing we know that happens is it becomes stiffer. It becomes harder to the touch. And so we for instance, know that the normal liver in the body is one of the softest tissues that are in the body, very much like subcutaneous fat. Whereas physicians also know that patients with cirrhosis, many times they can actually feel their liver in their abdomen through the skin just by touching the abdomen, because the liver is almost rock hard. It's so stiff. So it's natural to think that if we could somehow image the mechanical properties of tissue non-invasively, we could detect this process of fibrosis before it advanced to cirrhosis. So guessing that might be possible to diagnose liver fibrosis using a technology that could image the mechanical properties of tissue was one of the motivations for doing the research that led to this new technology. And the way this works is that we put a special kind of mechanical wave into the abdomen. This is called a shear wave, and the frequency is very much like sound frequencies. It's very low frequency sound, but it's a different type of wave than a normal sound wave. And we put that into the abdomen using a special device that's coupled to the abdominal wall. It looks a little bit like a drum. And the patient is actually able to feel a vibration that is applied during the scan when this test is being done. So that was certainly one of the technical problems that we had to overcome to make this technique a reality, but we have that in place now. The second challenge is to image these mechanical waves in the tissue. And these mechanical waves, when they pass through tissue, only cause motions that are very, very small. In fact, they're only a little bit larger than the wavelength of light. They're very, very tiny motions. And you might wonder, in fact, it was always regarded as impossible that one would be able to image these waves inside the body non-invasively. But it turns out that magnetic resonance imaging, which of course has been around for more than 20 years, is remarkably versatile. And about 10 years ago at the Mayo Clinic, we invented a technique that is able to actually image these propagating mechanical waves inside the body in living people very effectively. So there are three parts to this technique that we use. We put these mechanical waves in, these shear waves, into the body, into the liver in this case. We then image them with this special magnetic resonance imaging sequence, and we get images which are very interesting, because we can actually see these propagating mechanical waves in tissue. But now we need to take that information and somehow convert it into an image that shows the mechanical properties. That turns out to be a very difficult problem. That involves mathematics that, in fact, before this field, before this we started this area, did not exist. And a colleague of mine, Dr. Armando Manduca at the Mayo Clinic, who is a mathematician, has been working for a long time on this and has developed special, what we call algorithms or inversion techniques, to take these data and convert them into quantitative images of elasticity. The final product of this test is called an elastogram. So just in brief, what happens is the patient comes in to an MRI scanning room. They lie on the table. This special device that generates the sound waves or mechanical waves in the abdomen is put on their abdomen. They go into the scanner, and then in the space of about 40 seconds during a series of breath holds, the MR data are acquired. This produces images of the propagating mechanical waves, and then these images are put into a very complex computer program that generates the final product, which is called an elastogram, which lets us see the stiffness of the liver in cross-section, and from that we can get information that turns out to be very helpful in making the diagnosis of liver fibrosis.
Wow. So what does this mean for the patient? How does this change patient care for people coming in that may have this fibrosis?
Well, we're in the process of just, of course, exploring what the potential applications are now that we know that indeed it has a lot of promise for detecting liver fibrosis. There are a number of scenarios, situations we're focusing on even right now. An example would be that if you are one of the 100 million people in the world that have hepatitis C, you know that you have a certain probability of having ongoing liver damage that could be occurring even though you feel perfectly well. In that setting, if the doctor has a high enough index of suspicion that indeed damage is taking place, you would go and have, at the present time, a liver biopsy, which would then be used to determine whether or not it's necessary to start treatment to treat the condition and stop the fibrosis. This gives us another alternative to that, because as you can imagine, having an invasive biopsy is not an attractive prospect for many patients, especially if you've already had it and perhaps it's normal and now a few years have passed and maybe there's some reason to think that perhaps the process has started. So this would be an example of where it would be very meaningful for a patient to be able to have a non-invasive technique that, if it's normal, says that you absolutely don't, at least for sure, don't need to have a liver biopsy. Another situation in which this might be quite helpful would be patients who do have known liver fibrosis, who do have this disease process and are being treated, and now we ask the question, is the treatment being successful? Is it reducing the fibrosis? Maybe we could stop the treatment. And in that setting, at the present time, the only way to make that determination would be to do another biopsy. And this gives us a capability, perhaps, to look at whether or not the disease is progressing.
I have a question about the relationship to this technology and the biopsy. Will it completely replace it? Or if you go in and you have hepatitis C, they're monitoring you perhaps with this, and they do find fibrosis, do you then have to go on to a biopsy, or you don't need one?
We don't know the answer to that yet. I certainly don't think that it's likely that we're ever going to completely replace the biopsy. But I think that this technology shows is very likely to be used in a way that improves the biopsy. So, for instance, when we biopsy the liver, there is a problem in that we're taking only a very tiny piece of liver tissue, and if the disease involving the liver is not uniform, then we may be getting it from the wrong location. And already we are seeing in our images that we can see areas where it looks like the disease in some cases is more advanced, and other areas where there is no disease at all. And this may well guide the area that we would biopsy then to get a better answer about what is going on. It's well understood that because of this sampling problem, this fact that the disease is not uniform in the liver, that the biopsy itself is not very reliable. And so perhaps by using this technology, we can improve the accuracy of biopsy when it is done, and in many cases, obviously, try to reduce the number of biopsies as well.
So do you see this possibly becoming a regular screening tool for people at high risk of cirrhosis from a variety of diseases?
As you know, imaging technology needs to be tested extensively before we know for sure where it fits in or how it fits into how we practice medicine. But based on the results that we've had so far, I think it's fair to say that we think that it's very likely that this technology will find a place in the routine evaluation of patients.
And so it means for patients a much less invasive, better monitoring of a disease process that they may or may have.
That's absolutely what we're working for.
Okay. And could I ask you another question about liver disease? Tell me some of the other liver diseases, like is it alcoholism, is it hepatitis C, other types of causes of liver disease?
Sure. On a worldwide basis, of course, hepatitis C is really one of the most important causes of liver disease, diffuse liver disease, but there are many other conditions that affect the liver. People can have reactions to prescription drugs that are unexpected and can cause liver damage. Patients can have conditions that affect their immune system that attack their liver and cause diffuse liver damage and can cause fibrosis. An evolving, almost epidemic of liver disease is coming on because of obesity. And people who have obesity have much higher incidence of what is called fatty infiltration of the liver. And this can be associated with a condition that is associated with liver inflammation and very likely is going to be causing many more cases of cirrhosis as we go forward in the future in the U.S.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. What other applications do you see in the future for this technology?
So the starting point of this research was really to put in place an imaging technology that in some ways repeats or duplicates what the physician is able to do with palpation, which of course has been used traditionally for detecting cancer, because we know that many cancers are very much harder than normal surrounding tissues. So a really obvious application, and indeed an application that we've had NIH funding to investigate, has been in the area of breast cancer. We know that many breast cancers are first detected by touch, and we certainly know that we need better ways to detect breast cancer early. We already have a tool that's almost 100% sensitive for detecting breast cancer, and that's something called contrast-enhanced MRI. We know that almost 100% of breast cancers light up after we give a simple contrast agent with MRI, and yet we aren't necessarily widely using this technology right now. And the reason for that is that many non-cancers also light up. So what we do in medicine or medical imaging when we have a situation where we are not necessarily characterizing an abnormality reliably is we try to look at another property. And in this setting, if we could look at the stiffness of tissue, we've guessed that perhaps we can improve the reliability of contrast-enhanced breast MRI. So we have an NIH-funded study right now to investigate that possibility.
Interesting. Any other applications, different diseases?
Sure. Any place where in medicine where we, when we have a new imaging technology, we look at areas where we perhaps are not doing as well as we would like to with the existing imaging technologies. And one area that really stands out is the whole area of degenerative diseases of the brain, what we know as Alzheimer's disease. We know that that's a disease associated with really serious symptoms when it's well advanced, but in the early stages it's very difficult to diagnose. And the interesting thing is that even though there is this accumulation in the brain of this abnormal protein called beta amyloid plaque throughout the brain, we also know that conventional imaging techniques like magnetic resonance imaging and computed tomography really don't show any changes in the early stages of this disease. So here is a diffuse brain disease that really is causing changes in the brain structure that we, at the moment we don't have any imaging technologies that are able to clearly detect. And so in that setting we would then ask ourselves, will this technology perhaps offer something in this area? And it's certainly reasonable to guess that this accumulation of this abnormal protein in the brain could change the mechanical properties or stiffness of brain tissue. And so we've been investigating that possibility to see whether or not MR elastography is able to make this diagnosis at an earlier stage.
That'd be a big deal, wouldn't it?
It would be very interesting.
Wonderful, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Brain cancer, too, I mean, with liver cancer, cancer all around the body, that's this potential to...
There is definite potential here. Now, in the case of brain cancer, in the case of liver cancer, we already have, many of our imaging techniques are already very capable of detecting the presence of these tumors. Sometimes we have trouble telling exactly what they are. In the case of the liver, there are tumors of the liver that people can have that are perfectly benign. In fact, there's a very common tumor of the liver or abnormality of the liver called a cavernous hemangioma that many, many people have. And we have developed over the years ways of trying to determine whether something that we see is one of these benign tumors or whether it's something that's more serious. But we can always use ways that might improve that. And certainly in this area, magnetic resonance elastography may have some potential.
I'm going to go back to a question mm-hmm. about the liver and cirrhosis. If you have cirrhosis from hepatitis C, you may or may not get better with medical treatment, mm-hmm. depending on the way the virus is in your body. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. What about for other diseases and, say, if you have it from alcoholism and you have mm-hmm. cirrhosis, if you stop drinking, can mm-hmm. you stop that progression, or is it just going to go as well?
Right. I think that we draw a distinction between this condition that we call fibrosis and when it gets... that the liver becomes so severely scarred that it no longer functions properly, and we call that cirrhosis. Cirrhosis is regarded as something that is not reversible, and it's generally only treatable by a liver transplant. Mm-hmm. In general, in most cases, liver fibrosis can be treated in one way or another. In some cases, it's a matter of stopping the disease that was causing it in the first place, or the abnormality. For instance, if it was a toxic drug reaction, to stop the drug that was causing it, or if it was hepatitis C, to somehow treat the underlying infection, or in the case of obesity, to treat that and possibly reverse the disease.
Do hepatitis A and B, can they also cause liver damage?
They certainly can, yes.
But not to the extent, they're not as prevalent, but there are vaccines for them.
Right, they're treated with vaccines, and of course they also have a somewhat different natural history in that they tend to be very acute, and they cause acute inflammation of the liver. The patient becomes very sick, and in some cases they can end up with liver fibrosis or cirrhosis. But in the case of hepatitis C, the reason it is so serious in this regard is it generally doesn't make patients very sick. In fact, they may feel perfectly normal. They may carry it through their whole life, and in many cases may not develop any symptoms or any damage as a result. But unfortunately, a small number of people do, and it's so insidious that we really need to look for what it's doing in that population.
Are there any risks associated with this new procedure?
That's one of the nice things. This is a completely non-invasive technology. The risks are the same as those of conventional MRI, which are really very minimal. There are some people who should not have an MRI because, for instance, they might have an implanted pacemaker or some other kind of electronic device, or a few very rare people who have a certain type of metal in their body of one kind or another. But in general, MRI is a safe procedure, and MR elastography is exactly the same in that regard.
How long are you in the booth, so to speak?
So, the procedure of MR elastography, as we're currently using it right now for evaluating the liver, takes about 40 seconds only of imaging time. But usually it's an add-on. It's something that's done in addition to a standard MRI examination of the whole abdomen, which many of these patients need to have. So it would be 45 minutes long or half an hour long for the standard MRI examination. And the MR elastography part of it, you probably would hardly notice, except for the fact that during that time, you're going to feel the vibration.
Interesting, interesting. And so people might be confused a little bit when they hear the vibration, that it is a sound wave, but it's not ultrasound.
Right, it's absolutely not ultrasound. Ultrasound would refer to very, very high frequency sound, way above what humans can hear, usually up in the millions of cycles per second. Whereas we're working at a really very low frequency sound to the extent that you can hear it. In the case of the liver examination we've been talking about, liver MR elastography, we're using frequencies of 60 hertz, which is a very, very low-pitched hum and feels more like a vibration than a sound.
Interesting. It's really amazing, isn't it? It's exciting.
You know, I really had the privilege in my early career as a radiologist to be involved in the early trials of MRI. That's a little over 20 years ago. So I had the opportunity, which many people don't get, to be involved in the very earliest stages of a new technology. So we were seeing things with MRI that had never been seen before. And almost everything that we learned was something new. Everything we saw and could explain was something new, was new scientific knowledge. So that was in a very exciting time, and many people don't have that in my field, don't have that opportunity. Well, I can tell you now as we look at these new images that we're generating, this is an entirely new way of looking at the body, at looking at tissue, and that same type of excitement is really present now as we had it in those days.
Thank you for joining us. For more information on the various podcasts available from Mayo Clinic, go to www.mayoclinic.org/podcast.